Coming up on this episode of All About Android, it's me, Ron Richards, Florence Ion, and David Immel from Android Authority. We discuss new events on the horizon. Samsung's Unpacked event, OnePlus's Nord event. They're doing that in AR, by the way. Also, David shares his thoughts on the Sony Xperia 1 Mark II, as well as the LG Velvet. Google Plus lives on, sort of. Nearby Sharing, a.k.a. AirDrop for Android, is in beta. Your email and more next on All About Android. All About Android is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remote. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, especially right now, but there's one place you can go where you can get a quality candidate within the first day. That place is ZipRecruiter. Try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Android. Welcome to All About Android, episode 480, recorded on Tuesday, July 7th, 2020, your weekly source for latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards.
And I'm Florence Iyo.
Oh, hello, the three of you. Actually, so the two of you, but it's really three of you, which means four of us. See, I can do remedial math. It's possible. Joining us today is David Immel from Android Authority. How you doing, David?
Hello, guys. As you can see, it's a little bit darker because I'm on the East Coast and you guys are still on the West Coast. So.
Ron shares a coast with you.
I'm also on the East Coast, but I have the windows closed and I'm on 240 frames per second or whatever my setting is because I'm not at home. I'm actually at my sister's house and ill prepared. So I'm on a borrowed laptop, but it is nighttime here through the window that is closed.
So, you do look rested and relaxed, so okay. That's a good
thing. I am rested and relaxed. I had help with the babies, and it's been very nice this past extended holiday weekend, but I'm now in a 14-year-old girl's bedroom doing the show once again. So,
well, Ron, the brightness of your camera will make up for the darkness of David's background. Even out somehow in the grand scheme
nice.
Of things. I just think, honestly, David, I just think it's a mood. I think you're coming at us with a mood tonight, and I'm really curious to see what you come up with in this mood.
I agree. Ooh, and we all know David is about the aesthetics because David is always posting fantastic photos in his social media, aren't you, David?
Thank you.
Let's do that. Okay. Thank you very much. Let's do this. It's time that we start talking about some Android news because that's why we're here. So, Burke, take us there.
It's time to defold and unpack the news.
Whoa. Burke did like a real intro to Android news. That actually happened.
You can thank Anthony for that.
It's a whole new world.
That was amazing. I mean, I was taking a drink from my water bottle. I almost did a spit take the second because you totally took me by surprise.
So you said we can thank Anthony for that. Is that because Anthony did it or did he write your script?
I have writers.
He has a team writing his news bumper. Okay. All right. Flo, you got the most, the freshest news story of the day.
Super fresh. And I also have writers. Jason wrote this one for me. So Samsung announced the Galaxy Unpacked event. And guess what? Everybody is invited this year because they're holding it virtually. So Wednesday, August 5th, mark your calendars for 7 a.m. for those of us on the Pacific Standard or Pacific Daylight Time Zone, and 10 a.m. in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Two Note 20 models are expected, including the Note 20 and Note 20 Ultra. That's kind of been leaking already around the web. Possibly also an announcement of the next Galaxy Fold 2, also known as the Galaxy Z Fold 2, with a larger 7.7-inch internal display and a hole punch camera. It's also possible that we will see the addition of a Galaxy Z Flip 5G, because what would 2020 be without 5G buzzing in everybody's ears like that mosquito that just won't die?
5G train is still rolling. No coronavirus is going to hold that train back. These leaked photos, like, are we certain that these are real? Because they look real. Like, this looks like a really nice phone. I have to say the Galaxy Note 20 Ultra, which I think is what this pair of leaked photos is. Man, I love that color. It's kind of like a bronze ish mm-hmm. color, or is that rose gold? Is this rose gold? I'm not really quite sure. Dave, what do you think?
It's a bronze. I'm pretty sure, not bronze. They were pulled off of Samsung's Ukrainian or Russian website, one of the two. So they are most likely legit if they're on the actual website. And then the new teaser shows the exact same bronze color dropping a little drop out of the Note pen. So I think we can assume that these are real, which is awesome because I think that it actually looks really good. So I'm super excited for that.
I'm imagining the Galaxy Fold form factor with that S Pen and just how exciting the idea of that would be and how that really just, you know, this week I've been charging the Tab S3 that I still have from like eons ago. I'm still using it. And I was just thinking, God, it would be so nice to have this like in a little foldable form with a little S Pen, just be able to do all the things I want to do. I don't know. And that form factor that leaked looks really slick. So.
Yeah. I think they said they're not going to use the pen on this fold, which if that's true is kind of disappointing. But I think they probably want to make the glass / plastic like mixture a little bit stronger before they do that, which is sad. But I love the fold. And once the Fold 2 comes out, you guys have to have Michael Fisher on here so he can rant at you guys for like an hour. I'm sure he'll be excited to do that.
That was the one thing I was like, ooh, a new fold. We're going to have Michael on because David, after that night we had in the bar right before the pandemic, I got an earful about the foldables for Michael.
That night
right?
before so the I, pandemic.
Yeah. It literally was, wasn't it, David? It was like, it was at least.
That was
the last time I went out before we started working from home at my job and all that sort of stuff. I was supposed to hang out with Michael that weekend and it didn't happen because everything was all Corona crazy.
And then you just randomly ran into us at the bar. It was so
that
weird.
That was my favorite pinball place. That was the best. So.
Yeah.
Weird things happen with Ron and pinball places where people suddenly appear and they either see each other there or they don't. Of course, I'm calling back to the time that Ron and Flo were apparently in the same damn pinball place on the opposite coast of the country at the same time and never knew that the other person was there.
Nope.
Very bizarre things happened.
Nope.
And there was no discussion of foldable phones that night either. So it was very depressing. But
too bad. Too bad.
But no, it's funny because this Unpacked event, I was like, oh, August 5th. Oh my God, that's so far away. But it's July, which I don't know how that
it's
happened.
It's less than a month.
It's literally like, right. I'm like, how is August right around the corner?
I thought I was like, oh God, it's right around the corner because now we're getting to the point during this like shelter in place, staying at home that it's like now the days are starting to muddle together where I'm just realizing, oh, it's July. Okay.
Yeah.
So before we know it, it'll be here. Yep. And so this plus Ron, another little launch that's coming soon is going to be make this a summer of phones to look forward to and distract us from the fact that we're still stuck inside the house.
It is exciting. That's a good segue to our next story, which is, the past couple of weeks we've been tracking the OnePlus Nord, which I don't think is a good name. But we've had Why do you love it?
I love it because, and this is a bad reason, I really, really like the Nordic region and gorgeous and cool. I was thinking about writing an opinion piece called like the OnePlus Nord makes me nostalgic for phones that had names that meant nothing. And there's a more concise way of putting that. But like back in the feature phone days, there were so many phones that just had names that didn't make any sense. And you cannot like it, but at least it makes them identifiable, right? Like people still remember those phones by their weird names. So
they also said that this is
chocolate.
Some sort of dignity associated with it, with a descriptive name versus just a number or, you know, or the repetitive type thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
S8, S9, S10, like, come on, let's get something unique. And I think they also said it was a line. It wasn't just a single device. So if it, I think it's going to be their whole budget line, at least if I remember correctly.
Okay.
Anyway.
Well, so a little more news on this one. Amazon India sent out an invite for the AR launch event on July 21st. It's made to be experienced 21st of July is what they said. Then they soon pulled it, which is always a sign of a problem. The invite mentioned nord.oneplus.com/NordAR. So a little hint that Nord is going to have some sort of augmented reality piece, maybe. I don't know. And then yesterday, OnePlus finally confirmed that event, July 21st at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific, confirmed to be an augmented reality event so customers can experience the product from the safety of their homes. And there's a Nord AR app that must be installed on a device to participate. And you might remember that OnePlus had the world's first product launch in VR for the OnePlus 2 in 2015. So here we are again with OnePlus trying to, you know, tap into technology to deliver the news about their phones. Do we think an AR experience is a good way to do an announcement? What could this be?
Does anyone remember when they did the VR experience?
Yeah.
They sent out VR headsets or cardboard headsets.
Yeah. Hey, well, they were nicer than cardboard. They were plastic and they were free.
That's true.
And they only had I think they had like 500 available, but I was able to sign up fast enough to get one. I think I still have it somewhere. Yeah. But it was a pretty bad event. I don't know.
Are you going to use the AR app to experience it or?
Yeah, just cause you know, it's our job. We should probably see what they're trying to do and how well they execute it.
And that's just like in 2 weeks from now.
I know. It's like there's usually the summer is really quiet and I can relax a little bit, but I feel like coronavirus pushed things back a little bit. So like Asus is holding an event on the 22nd for ROG3. And then we've got this like the day before or something. And then we've got apparently now Unpacked like a week later. It's like, oh gosh, guess it's not a quiet summer. And then if the Pixel 4a ever releases, we'll probably get that too.
Well, it's the beginning of fall push, you know, consumer product push to get to the holidays. Right. So they're teeing everything up. So it does seem like it's going earlier, though, as opposed to everything being pushed out. It seems like this is going earlier, but who knows? Well, the Nord AR app is available in the Play Store now, so you can go download it now and get ready for July 21st.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was showing off on my camera a little bit. If you're watching the video version, I was outside and, you know, fired it up and went to the site and everything. And they have like a placeholder kind of AR experience where you can see like a dummy phone on the table and it gives you the schedule of when the event is and everything. But I think it's just there to let you know you're doing it right. So kind of neat. I think it's interesting that like we've got both sides of the spectrum here between these two announcements. The OnePlus Nord that's going to be a much less expensive device even compared to other OnePlus devices. And on the flip side, you've got the Note 20 Ultra, of which you can only imagine is probably going to be somewhere in the 1500, if not more, range. It's going to be a flipping expensive phone. So I don't know. Weird times. This is neat. We've been talking about this from time to time, and now we have the beta, and I've actually played around with it a little bit. Ooh. Google's own AirDrop. So, you know, iOS devices have AirDrop. It's for local peer-to-peer file sharing. It's actually a really cool system. Used it a couple of times, and it just works really well. We've had something similar to this on Android in the past. It was called Beam. But it did all of the file transfer, if I'm not mistaken, through Bluetooth and NFC. So file transfer was really slow and not all phones had NFC. And, you know, it was around a number of years, but it never really took off. Well, now we have nearby sharing, which you can get right now if you are opted into the Play Store services or the Google Play services beta track. Enable that. And if you're lucky, you will see nearby as a SharePoint. On your share sheet, which essentially it's more similar to AirDrop. It uses Bluetooth to connect and then Wi-Fi direct for file transfer. They're targeting Android 6.0 and above for this. In fact, I tested it on my OnePlus, I think it's my OnePlus 5 that's running Android 7, and it works on there. You get a quick settings tile that you can use. It doesn't toggle the mode yet, but I'm sure it will once they finally come out of beta. And it was really fast. Like, I tested moving a 1 gig video file from one phone to the other, and it took a minute. So I thought that was pretty good.
Not bad.
Yeah. So do we need this though? Because like, when I think about my own use case for this, is often I've got a file on one phone, I want it on the other, and the thing that I think to do, which is pretty stupid considering we have so many different options through third-party developers, is like I email it to myself. And I don't know why I do that. It's just the thing I think of, and I do it.
I upload it to myself and Slack in a DM, and then go to the other device and download it from Slack.
I do that on Slack and with Slack and with Telegram. I just upload like that. Like, it's so sad that there isn't a more seamless way to do things. Like, the only non-AirDrop solution that there really is a Huawei Share. But then you have to have a MateBook and a Huawei phone for that. And it works really well, but when you're restricted to two specific devices, it just doesn't... I wish that Windows and Microsoft and Google would have a better relationship and just try to implement that in more natively to Windows, but... I don't know if that'll ever happen.
It just feels so late. Blurry. It feels like it's a necessity that they're working on that they should have implemented so long ago. But I don't know if it's going to... I don't know. That's how I feel about it. I just don't know.
It does the trick. I have to say, like, in my playing around with it, I've got an episode of Hands on Android that's coming out on Thursday, and it's going to focus almost entirely on this feature. And it's really nice to have it in the quick settings tile. Like, they really have done what they needed to do to make it about as easy as it could be. You know, it appears right there in the share sheet. So it's there when you're looking to share something across, and it's fast, and it's not using, like... the way it was before. It's not using a technology that many phones just won't have. Most phones are going to have this technology now. So I think they're doing it right. And they're targeting Android 6 and above. So I think once people know that it's there and can trust it, then maybe there will be some movement on as far as like whether people rely on it, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, it's no AirDrop. I'll give you that much.
Well, how do you
know?
Is that
a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, it's a good thing, I guess, because it's not AirDrop. I don't know. I was going to say it's a bad thing because nobody's going to get unsuspecting memes sent to their phone, but I guess it's probably a good thing.
Yeah, well, that's true. That. With this setup, that won't happen because it's all based on your contacts. It's contacts-based. You can't keep it super open so that you're on a subway and someone realizes you are and just sends you a random picture. Do you really want that? Like,
people do love to do that with AirDrop. They do love to do that in airports. Yeah. So, and that could be a fun a byproduct of the technology if they leave that in there, but I don't want that.
So. Right. I can see why Google's maybe not.
Do they have like the Wi-Fi SSID/password sharing thing where if someone else in the room has an Android phone, you can just be like, oh, I'm connected to the Wi-Fi. Tap my phone and then you could be connected to the Wi-Fi, or is that not a thing yet? Because that's so... The iPhone 11 Pro was the first iPhone that I've ever used, and there's so many features on it that I'm just like, this is really, really useful.
I know what you do have in Android is you can go to your Wi-Fi settings and you end up with a QR code, right? You could... You know, if you have another phone, put your camera on it, the link comes up, and that connects you to that Wi-Fi. So that's one way to do it. But I think I just showed you all my Wi-Fi. Anywho, probably edit that out. Not that you're coming over anytime soon.
I was just going to say, quick, drive up to Northern California. And
well, if I do come over.
I could come use your Wi-Fi over, next time I'm in town and I need Wi-Fi,
Yeah, if I do come over, you'll probably give me the Wi-Fi anyway, so,
That's true, that's true. In fact, everybody, come on over.
It's the first thing you ask for everyone. Someone's house.
Let's take a break, thank the sponsor, and then we'll get into some cool hardware stuff. In fact, David, you've been playing around with a couple of phones. I'm very curious to hear about these phones. But first, this episode of All About Android is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring can be difficult, especially right now. But if you're a company that's currently trying to hire, obviously, you face new difficulties. You may not have even seen these difficulties coming, but nonetheless, they're here. You still need to hire. You still need to fill that position. So it's very important. Well, HousingWire could relate to that. They needed to hire an ambitious reporter to cover news stories on the U.S. housing markets. So they actually turned to ZipRecruiter. That's how HousingWire found Alexandra Roja. Alexandra herself, she never imagined that she could get a reporter job during COVID-19. So what she did is she created a profile on ZipRecruiter. And ZipRecruiter matched Alexandra to HousingWire's reporter job, mainly because her degree and her writing skills happened to be a great fit for the role. HousingWire received her application, and that happened only 4 hours after they actually posted the job. And a few weeks later, what do you know, Alexandra started her dream career, and during such a difficult time. So it's just a testament to how easy ZipRecruiter is and how it's really working for you. If you've got a position, that's kind of what it's all about. You don't have to go out and seek and find. They kind of do that for you based on all the information that they have and the people coming through the door. So let ZipRecruiter help you hire and see why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Try it now for free. It's ZipRecruiter.com/Android. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Android. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire, and we thank them for their support of All About Android. Okay, it's time for some awesome hardware in the awesome hardware block. This is where David brings not one, but 2 phones on the show that we have not seen yet. Ooh. One that you're still kind of working on your review. We'll talk about that one first. The Sony Xperia 1 Mark II. Is that how you're saying it? That's how they want you to say it, right? Mark II.
They probably want you to say Mark, but I just say 1-2. Just, I don't know. It's fun.
1-2-1-2. So you have the Sony Xperia 1-2. What do you think? What are your thoughts? What is it best at, if you had to pick like a category that it excels at?
Yeah, so review is going live in the next couple of days, probably tomorrow or the next day. But what I really like about this phone, it's very hard to see because it's very
shiny. There we go. There's
shiny.
The Sony.
Got to get the angle, yeah. So the last Sony phone that I reviewed was the Xperia XZ2, and that was like some of the Sony phones that they tried to make like water, where they were like rounded, and they took out the headphone jack for some reason, even though they're Sony. And like the whole thing with Sony for me has been they're probably one of the most well-positioned corporate companies, conglomerates, to make a smartphone, because our smartphones have not necessarily replaced but supplemented almost every electronic device that we have in our lives. They have their Bravia team for their TVs. They have their Alpha team for the camera. They've got all their headphones that they make. You know, it's like they're such a giant company, and they make top class stuff in every single category. Xperia XZ2 was really bad, in my opinion. Like, the camera was awful. It was a weird design. It didn't have a headphone jack. It just bothered me a lot. Xperia 1 Mark II, I think this is a fantastic phone, I will say, first of all. And you're asking me what it, does it do best? I think just the general, like, use experience of the phone is really good. It's 21:9. Wow, that's blown out. Yeah, it's 21:9, which you do have to get used to a little bit at the beginning. But in my opinion, you get used to it really... Yeah, right. You use it really quickly, though, because like most phones are becoming like 20:9 or 20.5:9 at this point anyway. But I actually really like this narrow but also tall kind of design. What I like a lot about the UI is that they stripped almost all of their custom UI stuff And it almost feels like Pixel UI. Like, it's just the most simplistic form of Android you can find. Like, all of the apps, all the default apps are just Google apps, like on the bottom bar here. I didn't even change any of these. So you got Google Phone, Google Messages, Chrome, Google Photos. And then you can swipe left and you get the Google feed, or it's not Google Now anymore, right? Google Feed. And settings are the same. So it's a trade-off, because the good part about that is that it's super simplistic. You don't have anything that you don't want necessarily. But the bad part about that is that things that Google still has not added yet, like built-in screen recording, you're also not getting, because they haven't really added much. But overall, I still really like the UI. That being said, using that kind of UI actually kind of unlocks the Snapdragon 865 a lot in this phone. We have a full like objective testing suite that we run a lot of benchmark stuff through. And this actually scored the highest in Gary Sims' Speed Test G, who he's a very smart man who works for us. And it's scored as like the highest Android phone so far. And we'll get more into the Velvet later, but the 765G on the Velvet is a fine chip, but it's slow because LG's skin is so bad and so slow and so old. So anyway, back to Sony. The camera system, very versatile, and I really like their color tuning, which is to say there isn't much color tuning, which I actually kind of like, because a lot of, you know, Samsung or whatever will just like boost the saturation like crazy on everything. Sony doesn't really do a lot to what's coming in the sensor. And their whole point for this phone was, let's make an A9, which is their flagship sports wildlife camera, and let's put it in a phone. So in photography, there is three zoom lenses that they call the Holy Trinity. And that would be like 16 to 24, 24 to 70, and then a 70 to 200. And so they tried to mirror that in this system. So you've got a 24 millimeter lens, a 16 millimeter lens, a 24 millimeter lens, and a 70 millimeter lens. You can kind of like zoom in between each of them. But they're not using their newest sensor that we saw in like the Oppo Find X2 Pro or the OnePlus 8 Pro. And the reasoning for that is because it's a very large sensor, and the bigger the sensor you put in a phone, the larger the image circle you have to be able to capture, and the more data comes through, and it's a 48 megapixel image. These are all 12 megapixel sensors, and they wanted to make this like the A9, and the A9's flagship feature is the fact that it can do 20 FPS raw burst mode shooting. So that's something that Sony is trying to bring with this phone. So, and it's actually pretty impressive. I've tested it quite a bit. It can do autofocus during every single one of those 20 frames, and it checks for focus 3 times per frame. So it's actually doing a focus acquisition / calculation 60 times per second, which is really impressive. There's pretty much no other phones that have done that. And the way they do that is they have actually put the DRAM chip directly against the sensor, which is what they do in the A9 as well to get that same capability. So overall, camera system is good. It's definitely not the best. There's better camera systems out there. Huawei's doing better. OnePlus and Oppo, who have the new Sony sensor that Sony won't use itself. It's really good. It's got really good white balance. But it's fine, and it's versatile. I would prefer to have like telephotos and a wide and a standard lens over like something like a ColourPop camera or something anyway. So whatever that means. Love having the headphone jack. Obviously, like, it was weird that they took that away considering it's Sony and they make some of the best headphones on the market. And that's just like nice to have. And then you can have FM radio and all this other stuff. Side mounted fingerprint reader is debatable for a lot of people. I've always liked it. They've always had that in Xperia phones basically forever. It's a 4K display. So that is, you could make whatever you want of it. It definitely impacts the battery life a little bit, but it has a 4,000 milliamp hour battery, and I got about 6 hours of screen on time, and my average is about 6 hours. So it's not bad battery life. It's not insanely good, but if you put your eye right up to the display, you cannot tell individual pixels apart, which is actually surprising. because on 1080p phones and even on 2K displays or whatever you want to call it, you can definitely kind of see the pixels. So, I mean, it's a good display. It's like it's a Bravia OLED 4K HDR 10-bit, all that stuff. So, that's about it. The front-facing camera is pretty horrible, but that's because the sensor is really, really small. But they did put these bezels on the front of the phone instead of doing a notch. And honestly, I really like it. The bezels are crazy thin. So I would, and this phone is $1,200. Personally, I would buy this over the Galaxy S20 Plus, which is also $1,200, just because I like so many things about this phone more. But a lot of people are going to debate that. So anyway, that's my...
I mean, that's a big statement.
5-minute elevator pitch. Yeah, I guess so. I guess so.
I think a lot of people would go, oh, at least here in the U.S., you know, Sony has had a history on this show where we want Sony phones and we show them, but then for whatever reason, they don't get a whole lot of attention, a lot of traction in the U.S. For a long time, the Sony design aesthetic was just always felt really dated and same to itself. So I'm happy to see that Sony's kind of working out of that a little bit, because it's like, all right, here's another phone that looks just like the other Sony phones that have been released the past 4 years. This actually looks like a really nice phone. Looks like the display is a 60 hertz refresh rate. So when you're talking about these kind of higher range premium devices, now we're getting more and more used to the 90 hertz and 120 hertz. So that might be a little bit of a concession. They say that there's a motion blur reduction feature that I don't know if it simulates 90 hertz equivalents or what, but they're getting there somehow, sort of. But I don't know if it's
probably
good
that
enough,
frame interpolation thing that they put the hardware encoding that they put to like get movies up to 60 hertz, and then it looks terrible. Right.
so that they can say that they can get there, so that they can put that in the spec sheet and be like, oh, actually, asterisk 90 hertz, sort of. Yeah.
But, you know, when I had the briefing for this phone, I got to talk to the engineer who like works on the alpha team for the cameras. And I don't agree with the decision that they made to use the like slightly smaller sensor than the one they have available. But I understand why they did it, because they really, really wanted to have that same 20 FPS burst mode than that they have in the A9. And so that's why they sacrificed a little bit of image quality and low light performance to be able to get that. And I think an issue that Sony phones have had in the past is that everyone's like, you're a giant company who has all these resources and they're some of the best on the market. Why aren't you making the best smartphones on the market? This feels to me like one of the first phones that they've actually brought in a lot of people from different teams and been like, okay, how can we make a good smartphone? So yeah, I like it a lot.
Yeah. I mean, when you hold it up, it looks super slick and just so glassy. It looks like a really nice phone.
Where can you buy a Sony phone, and what networks does it work on in the US? This particular device.
This phone is available at the end of July, so I don't really know why they sent out review units so early. They have 5G disabled on this phone, and they won't tell me why. I keep asking them, and they've said, we don't know what we can tell you publicly, but it has something to do with the amount of rollout of 5G that has happened so far. And I don't know if that means that they're waiting for like Verizon to expand its millimeter wave coverage or what, but I know you can buy it from Sony directly and probably at like Best Buy. They actually had a pre-order, a pretty good pre-order going on for a little bit, where if you bought the phone, you would also get their like $300 truly wireless headphones that are super good and have noise cancellation for free. But that was only through the end of June, and this phone doesn't release till the end of July. So probably a missed opportunity there, but
this is a common Sony problem. They've been doing this for years with the
It's also, I mean, I'm looking online. You can get it at Amazon. You can get it at B&H. You can get it direct from Sony. So like you can get it. It's expensive.
It's
a $1,200 phone unlocked, right? That's pretty, you know, I don't know. That's pricey.
It is.
It's in the upper tier.
It's like, I feel like there was this quiet uptick of price through Samsung that nobody really discussed that much. Like the Galaxy S10 started at like $8.99, and then the Plus was the $9.99. But then this year, the smaller one was the $9.99, and the Plus was $11.99, which is actually a $200 bump. Mm-hmm. So that's become like the norm, and I don't know if it's fair or not, but I usually use like Samsung's flagship as like a benchmark, because most regular people consider Samsung phones to be like Android's iPhone. They're a little like poster styled, you know? So, with the phone being, it's expensive, like you said, Ron, $1,200 for anybody to pay for a phone is ridiculously expensive, especially when almost any phone that has like 6 gigs of RAM can run Android fine now. But for what they're offering, like you have IP68 water resistance. You've got expandable storage. It's a 256 gigabyte storage phone with 8 gigs of RAM, dedicated shutter button, 3 cameras, 4,000 milliamp hour battery, 4K OLED display. Like, usually phones have like one or two little trade-offs. Like the OnePlus 8 Pro doesn't have official certification, or it doesn't have a headphone jack, you know. This has like everything. So I don't really know what else you could add in this except for better cameras. And it's, the camera's not bad. It's just like, I really would have liked them to use the Oppo Find X2 Pro's Sony sensor. But you know, maybe in the Xperia 1-3.
One Mark III.
Yeah, that's I'm just trying to get over the Xperia 1-2 as a name. That's whatever. But I don't know. Yeah. It's funny because I always see these Sony phones at Best Buy. Like, you can get them. I never see someone actually using them. I rarely ever see them in the wild, but they're out there, I suppose.
They're very popular in Japan. Popular in Japan. Every time I've been there, I see a lot of Sony phones. And they do have SKUs that we don't have here, but they're actually a pretty popular phone company in Japan.
But I also feel like that's watching a K-drama and everybody's using a Samsung or an LG phone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just, Sony's always been this way. I don't know what it is. I don't know.
It is
how long
strange.
They can carry this.
Yeah. Their mobile department has kind of always been just like, we should make one for a vanity project, I guess. You know, they don't really treat it as like a main priority.
I'm just thinking like in the early 2000s, like getting a Sony product always required some sort of price hike to get it, because it was supposed to come with some sort of cachet. But I just feel like that doesn't really work for Sony in 2020.
Yeah,
that's true. Now, what about the LG Velvet? Because I know that you have spent some time with
the Velvet.
That's
the one that a lot of people
have
been asking about. That's
And that's a good name. That's a good phone name, LG Velvet.
That's a good name, exactly.
Is the Velvet descriptive of what you get?
Look at those colors that you get just on the webcam. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're good. They're good colors. They have like 6 colors of this phone, and there's a lot of really good ones. This one is Sunset. And then they've also got this really nice green, black, gray, and then some other colors. But yeah, okay, so I was super hyped on this phone as soon as it was announced, because basically since like the G7, I have been saying that LG's biggest problem is that their phone design looks like it is from 5 years ago. Like every single phone that they've made has had the pretty much same design with a very slight tweak. And even the V60, while very extremely similar, was their most fashionable phone yet, and it really didn't change much. So when they announced this, I think originally it was only going to come to South Korea. And then I think there was enough media hubbub in the US where they were like, or in Western markets in general, where they're like, okay, maybe we'll bring them over. And so even now we don't have like official pricing for these things in the United States or in Western markets, but they did say that it would be less than the Korean conversion, which is about $650. They said it would be like $100 less or something. So maybe $550. Anyway, this phone's design is really cool. It's got these awesome colors. It is crazy thin. Like it's hard to like show thinness on a screen, but I think it's like 7.3 millimeters. And it's definitely one of the thinnest phones that I have used in a really long time. So that's like Xperia 1-2 Velvet, and obviously like having a curved front. Yeah,
that's noticeably thin
because it curves at the edges. I see.
the rail basically only has room for the width of the button. Yeah, there you go. Zoom in a little bit.
Yeah, I see it.
So
that looks like it's really comfortable to hold.
It's actually not bad. Like, I was worried that it would be too thin because I don't know if you guys have tried the Nokia Sirocco before that came out at MWC 2 years ago. That phone is so sharp because of the way that it curves around. It, like, kind of hurts to hold. It's very, like, difficult. You kind of have to use a case. Mm-hmm. This one is, like, teetering on being too sharp, but it is actually, like, perfect. They kept the Google Assistant button from all the other LG phones, which is freaking awesome. I love dedicated hardware buttons. The display is a notch, which kind of sucks. I don't like that style of notch, but you can cover it up. They made a special dual screen for it that is pretty much exactly the same as the LG V60s, but it is white and it is a little thinner because this phone is thinner. But they fit a 4,300 milliamp hour battery in this. And I don't really know how.
The size of the battery for how thin
it is. 4,300 milliamp. It's like, that's more capacity than this phone. It's the same capacity as the Mate 30 Pro or Mate 20, Mate, I don't know, P40 Pro Plus. Okay, that one. that phone.
This is why we
is
need
like,
special names for phones. It makes it easier on the rest of us to remember their names.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So the battery life is pretty much also exactly average. And I honestly think it's just because LG's skin is outdated, it's old. Like, one funny thing is that LG has always had this recurring notification that just does not go away. That's an Android system notification that says, do not remove the battery while your phone is unresponsive. And it's always there. And it's been there like since the LG G3 and is still there. I see it right now.
It's still a valid warning. I mean, it might be nearly impossible to remove the battery, but it's a warning, right?
Do not remove that. And you can't really, you can, like, can't get rid of it. It's just like, why? How have you not fixed that? But anyway, yeah, their UI is like the same as it's been on like all LG phones. And they did clean it up like a little bit. But my problem with it is that like their icons look too childish and cartoony. And they look like, you know, they use like lime green and bright yellow and... which is like cool if you want to go for that aesthetic, but I think it feels just a little outdated. But that being said, they have a headphone jack, no quad DAC in this guy, but they do have this 3D sound engine thing that they added a couple LG phones ago, which basically uses like a database to try to identify the type of music you're listening to and then like open up the soundstage for it. And it works really well. I tested it directly against the V60 and to be fair, I don't own headphones that could probably benefit from a dedicated DAC. But using this without the 3D sound system thing against the V60 sounded way better. As soon as I turned on the 3D sound system thing, they sounded almost the same. So I think that's, they took it out of this phone. I don't really know why they took out the DAC. It might have been space. It might have been heating or something, because this one's definitely way thinner. But, you know, camera systems, it's basically supposed to look like a raindrop, which is really cool. Like the main source of the raindrop and then like falling, right?
Yeah, like
and,
that.
You know, they kind of pulled a OnePlus and that they added kind of extra sensors to just make it look nicer. There's like the main sensor on the top, which is not even that big. And then there is a... I think a wide, and then the other one's a depth sensor. That's like, yeah. So image quality is pretty bad. Overall was pretty bad. I was a little bit disappointed with it. And the V60s was definitely better, but, I don't know. I think like the design of the phone is really nice. And if it's not incredibly expensive and you're looking for something with expandable storage and a headphone jack, and if you throw like Nova Launcher on it, because I think that it's not the 765G that makes this phone slow, because the 765G is like a slightly tiered down version of the 855. So it shouldn't be that slow. I think it's just the skin. So if you threw like Nova Launcher on it, I'm sure it would be great. But I like this phone a lot. I'm really glad LG is going in that kind of direction. They basically said that Velvet isn't going to be like a line, but it's they're naming every single new phone that they release now with a unique name. So this will be Velvet, and then whatever's next will be something else, which, again, kind of a callback to our Nord thing. But
absolutely. Easier to remember than the model name -2-letter-letter-number-. Yeah.
I agree. Exactly.
Yeah, I know the first time I saw, you know, the kind of the early leaks of the LG Velvet, I was like, oh, this looks like a nice kind of direction from a design standpoint, which is what really jumps out at me anyways when I saw it for LG. So cool. I'm happy that you got to kind of give some time to it. I wanted to see it in person and never got the chance to. So nice. Well, thank you for wrapping both of those up. Appreciate that. And then Flo, we have one news story before we get into apps.
What's not nice is you gotta say goodbye to the Pixel 3a. It's been officially discontinued. So whether or not, even though we're waiting for that Pixel 4a announcement to just happen, you will not find the 3a standing next to it. Google's confirmed that the Pixel 3a is discontinued. It's still available through some partners while supplies last, of course. So if you can find it at a, you know, online at a Best Buy or wherever, and you want it, you better snag one soon. Somewhat related are some supposed renders of the upcoming Pixel 5, which I know might seem too early to talk about it, but with that Samsung event around the corner, it just reminds us that the year keeps going, and before we know it, it's October. I'm sorry?
I said everything is around the corner.
Exactly. Now, this comes from an unproven source known as XLeak 7. But if it's true, it basically means that the Pixel 5 will be a small step up from what we had expected the 4a would release. That is to say, it's probably not, or rather the rumors are saying it's not a premium flagship. We kind of know that, but again, it's not like super confirmed. Some of the rumored specs are a dual lens camera module, a rear fingerprint sensor, which we missed from the Pixel 4, a selfie camera on the front. However, no extra sensors on top of that. And while we're on the topic, of course, talking about these supposed pixel renders and pixel leaks, because we have no idea what is going on over here, Andrew Martonic from Android Central is wondering how a release of the 4A that's as close to the 5 as it's been rumored, how will that affect the Pixel 4a ultimately? And I think we're all wondering that too, especially because we don't have any concrete details on what is, again, happening with the Pixel line this year. The Pixel 4a's entire life cycle will effectively overlap with the next gen Pixel 5, which makes no sense when you compare it to what the last couple of years have been like in the Pixel realm. And why not just call it the Pixel 5a if it's going to be a simultaneous mid-range release? Anyway, we don't know because nothing has been officially confirmed. Right now, all we have is conjecture because, again, a lot of us are just at home bored. Bored in the house, bored in the house, bored. Wondering what's next for the Pixel.
This is what we do when we're bored.
Who knows?
We wonder about the Pixel. I don't know. Do we think that the Pixel, we don't know for sure, but time is ticking here. Suddenly, we're being swept into kind of the midsummer device announcement thing. So it either happens now or it will be so close to the 5 that it's going to be a little awkward when the 4A is released right at, you know, around the same time as the 5. It does kind of feel weird if they end up getting coupled together. What do you guys think?
I can't help but draw a comparison to, was it last summer's hit movie, Midsummer? With you just saying Midsummer, and I can't help but feel like we're just being gaslighted a little bit here, and this is going to turn into a huge horror movie where we end up in a room.
I hadn't thought about that as a possibility.
I never saw the movie, but I read the plot line because I don't watch scary movies. I need to know the pop culture. Like, I need to be able to reference it in pop culture, you know? So that's why I read it, because I don't do scary movies. But I imagine this could be our scary movie of the summer. It's just the mid-pixel summer. Pixel summer.
I don't know. Do we think we're going to see the 4A this summer? From a feeling standpoint, I kind of feel like we are. Like, I feel like waiting that long just doesn't make sense.
We'll see it, but it feels like it'll be anticlimactic in the end. I don't feel that rush that I did at the beginning of the year before everything went to the ground.
the ground.
I want to see the 4A. I'm looking forward to it whenever it does make an appearance, because, you know, I still love the 3A. Every once in a while, I use it because it's got the beta on it. No. So does my 4, actually. So I don't know why that would be the differentiator. But I think it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for them to hold off and wait, unless there's just something weird going on in the background, you know, the back channel, that is preventing it from happening. Outside of that, I kind of feel like Google, if they have the ability to, needs to get it out, like capitalize.
That might be the key thing. If they have the ability to, I think that, I just think the world that we live in right now is causing so many problems, from the supply chain through distribution, through all this sort of stuff, where every plan is kind of out the window. And every time you make a new plan, a week later goes by and you throw that out the window. Like, so I got to imagine that it's a byproduct of just the timing of the world. And maybe that's being overly Pollyanna or overly like forgiving to Google, but I got to imagine that they wanted it out. I would assume they wanted it out, not as close to the 5 or not. It just seems like everything's off schedule. So,
yeah.
In these uncertain times, the Pixel 4a just doesn't feel like it fits. So we're doing curbside phone announcements. I don't know. Guys, just being indoors is just it's
getting to you. It's getting the flow.
My brain is folding.
Quick, let's check out some apps. It's time for some app news.
A certain way because of what's happening.
Oh.
All right.
First subtle way of tearing me out of a breakdown.
That's called an intervention right there. We're gonna cut to the bumper and move on. So, and I gotta tell you, earlier today, Jason, I was having a conversation about social media, and I made a Google Plus joke.
And
I had not looked at
what we're talking about.
They knew what I was talking about, but I did not know that Google Plus would come up as a topic in the show today. So please tell us.
Yeah, neither did I. I kind of thought we've been through this song and dance before, Google Plus shutting down, all that. That was last April, but Google apparently kept it alive for enterprise users. Maybe we even talked about that, but I forgot about it because we're not using it at our, at Twit. For enterprise users who have relied on it, some enterprise users have built it as kind of like a communication system for their company. So Google Plus has kind of been kept alive for that reason. Now it's actually being rebranded officially to Google Currents. So yes, Google Plus is officially done. It's just something different called Google Currents.
What I think is so funny is that Google Currents was already an app from Google, right? That was their news aggregator app. Right, wasn't it with the blue circle logo?
Yeah. Yes, with the two rings that were blue and intersected, and it was like super early Gmail with like GChat. Your Google Currents was like your page where you could post updates and stuff like before Google Plus. So now they're going.
Well,
back,
no, that was way like, that was Google Wave. You're thinking of Google Wave. Google Currents was like a newsstand app. I remember I synced my Wired and my Entertainment Weekly subscriptions to it so I could read the magazine on my tablet through Google Currents. It was like a Flipboard kind of thing. But I guess they're like, hey, that's a Google Currents is a great name. Wow. Let's use it again. So
no Wave Currents. They got to do water things. So.
Yeah,
keep it up.
Sense from a enterprise standpoint. Just like looking at the page, the G Suite page with it, it looks exactly. I think Microsoft does. They have a sort of homepage that works this way for Teams for their enterprise software. Mm. So I imagine this is just. It's been very interesting to see Google subtly adding all of these features to like its enterprise to kind of just basically be able to play with the big boys, so to speak. I mean. I think Google Meet was the really big evolvement that happened kind of quickly, I think, to respond to, the fact that we all just started working from home kind of thing. And it's just been this steady rollout of new features that just makes it more like, this is the free enterprise software that you can adopt. And
I really
come
like
get
Google
this.
Meet.
It's the Google aesthetic with all the things you love about Google. And this just bundles in the API that they did with Google Plus, and it makes sense for like a small organization. To do this. So
yeah, added a link. Burke, you were just showing it off in, on the show, but I added a link in the show notes to the Google Currents release from 2011, which is exactly what you were talking about, the Flipboard.
Very different
competitor.
Very different idea than how it's being implemented for enterprise, but you can see how all that code was restructured to just work for this situation. From that point, it's fascinating to me to just think about how malleable this code is to just, you know, you put a new face on it and it's something else. So,
and the name, like, you know what? That was such a good name. Let's use it again.
Hey, listen, finding the name, like a trademark search and clearance and stuff like that can be a nightmare, right? So if you've got one and you're not using it, just use it.
That's fair.
And therefore, by that logic, next year we should see a new Google Reader emerge. What it will do, who knows, but they had the name.
What would a new spin on Google Reader that has nothing to do with RSS be?
Did they already rebrand Google Play Books, Google Play Movies to just Google Movies yet? Or is it still Google Play X?
It's even Google Play.
Google Play.
Aren't they slowly getting rid of the Google Play branding and just switching it to Google?
No, I mean, if you look at copywriting, like, it's still referred to as Google Play.
I mean, the app in my app drawer, Play Books, Play Games, Play Movies.
Probably just thinking because they got rid of Google Play Music and they switched it to YouTube Music. In my opinion, the dumbest move of literally all time, but I'm sure that there are other people.
And pretty soon it'll be called YouTube Books.
We are almost an hour into the show, and I thought we'd make it without mentioning YouTube Music, but thank you, David. We didn't. We continue our streak of talking about YouTube.
It's a topic that comes up literally every single show somehow, whether we have a news story or not for it.
It's because we're angry. It's fair.
It just is what it is.
So
Ron, you got a quick one.
Oh, yes, I do. Well, this is – and by the way, this is more – trolling flow than news, but we can't not do it, so we have to. But so listen, if you are a user of the Dark Sky weather app, you got a stay of execution. You got a stay of execution. It was going to be shut down on Android on July 1st, but they've extended it to August 1st. So you get one more month of reveling in your favorite weather app. Flo, how are you? Are you spending more time with Dark Sky now that you get this extra month, or have you moved on?
I uninstalled it as soon as I switched over to the OnePlus 8. I'm not using it anymore. And quite frankly, I'm a little disappointed at this extension because this is another month I don't get my refund.
All right, so Flo, if you don't have Dark Sky, then what do you have? It looks like you are in the hot seat for the app spotlight since we aren't doing the arena anymore. And, you have a weather app. So is this what you're using in place of it?
Yes, and guess what, guys? Because I try to keep things relevant around here. You can use this with a Play Pass. So if you're paying for that Play Pass subscription, I found you another app to download with one tiny little caveat before we get into it, which is that this app has not been updated since last year.
Don't know what's
going on with this developer.
Wow.
But the reviews, they've got over 82,000 reviews, the 4.5 out of 5 stars. So, I mean, and I've been using the app, and I will say aesthetically, it does not fill in the gap for Dark Sky. I think one of the big reasons that I was so attracted to Dark Sky was that minimalistic, like, it's very info-centric. It kind of reminded me a lot of Material, like the Material design on Android. And I like to continue in that aesthetic interface-wise. And this one might be a little, is a little different. The widgets aren't as simplistic as the ones that were on Dark Sky, but you know what? It is a very informative app. So if you're really into the weather and kind of knowing on what's going on in the world, this is a really good app. It's called, I realize I didn't even say what the name was. It's called Weather Live, and it's by the developer Apollon Apps. It's $6 if you want to buy it and you don't have the Play Pass, or if you have the Play Pass, you get it for free. And one of the reasons I really like it is because it gives you pays attention to detail. So you get things like there's a visibility counter, so it'll let you know how far ahead you can see. So on my screen, I don't have a visual of it, but I'll describe it quickly. on my screen, there's a little section for visibility, and it says 10 miles ahead, which is good. It's nice weather to drive, and, well, that's all we can really do these days. There's also a UV indicator, which I think is great for the summertime right now, especially with the sun blaring down on all of us. It'll tell you how high it is, you know, whether you should slab on that extra layer of sunscreen. There is info for the sea, including the sea, just the general sea. There's information that lets you know how warm or cold the water is. So the water near me right now is 57 degrees Fahrenheit, and we're dealing with a 5.2-foot wave height. This is really good information if you are, you know, paddleboarding or you're surfing. This is just good info to have that you can quickly jump in without having to Google it. I think one of the things about the weather is you can always get the information through Google, but sometimes it's nice to just have it available on, you know, in one tap. And this app is nice because it just puts it all on the front screen. You just keep scrolling and scrolling on that first app screen to get it. A couple other things I really like about it: gives you wind direction, wind chill. There's no chill right now, I'll tell you that, where we are. It's 85 degrees is the wind chill.
So
so cold. There is a photography panel. So if you are like our friend Aunt Pruitt, really into golden hour, this will tell you the perfect time to go out and take those shots, get your, you know, get your portfolio worked. David, you might be able to use this maybe for, you know, with your medium format camera and kind of get some of that lighting going. So a lot of really good information, you know, the placement of the sun and the moon when sunset and sunrise is, as well as, of course, the actual weather. Now, there's one little other caveat that I would like to say, which is if you turn off location access at all times, what's going to happen is I've set it to only have location access when I go into the app. It's going to default to the location of your Wi-Fi router. So if you're connected to Wi-Fi, my IP address is based in another city. So I'm getting weather information for the next city over versus exactly where I am, which is a bit of a kind of a whatever, but it's okay. It's fine. You just go in and refresh it and you can put it into your location of where you are actually. So Weather Live, one of the most thorough apps I've managed to find to fill in that hole that Dark Skies left. But when it comes to design, I'm still looking for a weather app that really fulfills that niche for me. So I'll let you know if I find it. I'm still looking though.
Right on. Weather Live.
Weather Lives by Apple on Apps.
I do hope for you, Flo, that you find that you find the weather app that fills your heart like Dark Sky does. And if it's Weather Live, I wish you well.
Well, yes. It's just in terms of I'm really if I can't find an app that fits me aesthetically, I'm into finding an app that will just be an incredible utility. So it's pretty much the apps that I have that do these functionalities, like that app I brought to the arena weeks ago, Loonscope, something like that. It gives you all the phases of the moon and like where the moon's going to be. Again, I like it to just be really thorough. Just, if you're not going to be pretty, then just be really thorough.
So right.
That's fair. Where I'm at.
Fair.
Everyone deserves to
be
find weather peace.
Really obsessed with that Google Earth feature where you could like point your phone up at the sky and see where all the planets were and like where all the stars were. And yeah, way back in the day on my HTC Thunderbolt.
That was kind of magical. Rip. First time that I did that anyways, but I imagine for a lot of people you go outside, you put your phone up and it's like tracking with the sky. I was like, whoa, smartphones are cool.
Yeah, pretty much.
What else can this thing do? Yeah, pretty sweet. Right on. That is Weather Live. All right. We have a couple of emails here to round out the show. You can always send us emails, AAA@twit.tv. Send us voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. I'm going to start with this one because I heard from a few people after last week, one of the emails, and I think it was the email of the week, which we'll get to, where I came up with like a really hacky way to take the phone to the call that's coming in and do a search with it. And then I heard from a bunch of people, it was like, you make it way more difficult than it needs to be. Craig wrote in to say, copying a phone number on my Pixel, if you long press on any recent number, copy is one of the options. There you go. So you just kind of long is. Press on it. And hey, that works too. But
I just love that Craig signed it off as hope this helps.
Yes.
Like, hope this helps, yes. Guys.
Hope this helps you kind of find an easier solution next time someone asks that's, you a question.
It's been staring you in the face the entire time.
But I remember my thought process when I read that original email. It wasn't, oh, I wonder if the app can do it. It was, oh, I assume that the app can't. Therefore, how can I do it? And so I jumped right to the hacky solution instead of like opening the app first and being like, well, maybe we missed something here. So anyways,
truly the nerd brain.
Sometimes it's fun to find the hacky approach. What's that, David?
Yeah. I said truly the nerd thing to do.
Yeah,
okay. Trying to figure out how you can make it more difficult for yourself.
and I definitely did that, which is not to say that it didn't work. It's a solution that works. It's just there's easier solutions too. So there you go. All right, Ron, you got the next one.
All right, next one's a little long, so bear with us, but it's a good one. Rebecca writes in, and she kind of answered a question I had asked, I think in last week's episode. Rebecca says, I'm sending an email today as I listen to the newest episode because I'm definitely in the minority that wants a functioning Android watch. There you go. I've been using my Fitbit Versa for almost a full year now, and I've run into so many difficulties that I don't know if I'll ever buy another Fitbit again. Their customer service isn't great. The syncing is hit or miss, etc. I've been desperately watching blogs and updates because I want a Pixel watch. I have a Pixel 4. I have the Pixel Buds. I basically accepted Google into my life with my smart devices and really want a functioning watch. I really benefit from the fitness aspect, but I love the idea of getting my text message on my watch, using Smart Pay, etc. There's a really poor market right now, and unfortunately, I've even considered buying an Apple Watch, but haven't because they're way too expensive, and my Fitbit is basically serving the purpose. I know I'm probably a minority, and you guys are probably right that a lot of people are not interested, but I wish that Android would come up with even one better than mediocre watch. I do agree a lot with Flo, though. The watches that are average are huge and made for men's wrists. The Versa is the perfect size for me. Signed, Rebecca, a loyal listener and someone who wants a watch. So,
sure, Rebecca.
I don't know. So is there a mediocre Android Wear watch that Rebecca can use, or is she just SOL? Because I don't think a Pixel watch is coming.
Rebecca's got to get the Galaxy Active that I have, because I'm telling you, it's a perfect size for me. It does all the tracking that I want. It actually syncs. And, I got to put together that list of apps. I've been saying that I was going to do this, and I think I need to do it like this weekend. I'm going to put together that list of apps for the Galaxy Watch. For those of you who are going over to Samsung, so you can see that I have made it work for me. The Tizen ecosystem may not be the most developed, thought out. I mean, it is developed, but you can't find everything that you want there. But there are workarounds to make things work. And when you make them work, you're like, this is the perfect size. This is comfortable. I don't get rashes. Fitbit man, giving me rashes.
Flo, have you played with the Fossil Women's Gen 4 Venture?
No, phone? But I don't. I mean, because Fossil is probably anymore. It's
Fossil.
I know,
aside from Android Wear, Fossil is probably your best bet for a Google anointed phone. And what's that, David? What are you showing there? Is that a Fossil
watch?
David
has a hybrid. Fossil Q hybrid.
It's very my aesthetic. It does exactly what I like, because I don't want more like it does notifications actually, and it will read you text messages and all that stuff. But I have those turned off. And if you have like those kind of things turned off, and I just have like step counting, the weather, my heart rate, that kind of stuff. It lasts like 2 weeks because it's e-ink. And you flip it, it probably won't work because it's not on my wrist, but it'll actually turn the stuff so you can see the information in case it's over it. But Rebecca should note that Qualcomm just announced a new Wear OS chip. They announced the Snapdragon Wear 4100 Plus. So maybe there will be functioning Wear OS watches coming out. However, that being said, I am still a diehard for these e-ink hybrid watches. I really like these. So
that's cool.
I'm looking on Amazon, and there's a Michael Kors Access Gen 4 MKGO smartwatch, and it's pink. It's got a small band. It looks like for a woman. It's running Wear OS. I mean, it's only $145. Like I feel like there are more options out there than we've really given it credit for. As I continue to defend this.
I was going to say, Rebecca did say functioning, and the problem with Wear OS is battery.
That's why I use Samsung. Yeah. Because I get almost 3 days out of that watch. In power saving mode, I can go a little longer. That watch is super durable. I can't tell you how many times I've run into a wall. I'm a very clumsy person. So, and I've broken Android Wear watches, like running into doors and stuff. I still have not broken.
My goodness.
So there's literally, I'm also seeing a Fossil women's sport metal and silicone touchscreen smartwatch, like as a Fossil women's sports watch. Again, I don't know about the battery life, but this is $159. Well, like depending, you know, I don't know.
This seems... lasts like a few weeks. This has lasted me like up to a month before. And I don't know if she's willing. Chai from Gadget Match has this exact watch, except it's a rose gold strap and rose gold surrounding. And I think it's smaller. I think it's like a 42 millimeter, and it looks really nice and it does the exact same thing. So it's not Wear OS, but the UI in the app is actually really nice. I just love Fossil stuff. I think they make really, really good hardware. These aren't that expensive. Yeah, well,
was a great watch company. Yeah, they were a great watch company when Google invested in them. I do like this product, this product line that on Amazon for the Fossil women's sport watch. Extend your battery life for multiple days with new smart battery modes. So multiple days. There you go.
So I do need to just make one comment about Fossil, which I think is something that this is purely anecdotal, this comment I'm about to make. But from what I have heard from people who have bought Fossil watches is that they tend to be these Android Wear watches just seem to not, I don't know, they don't have the same quality detail as other Fossil watches. So it's possible Google will give them a whole makeover and this will be a different story maybe 6 months to a year from now. But at this point, I would not recommend anything beyond what David has, which is a hybrid Fossil watch. Those I really like, and I have one that I've had for years, and it's great. And it uses a watch battery, which lasts for 6 months.
Yeah.
So,
and honestly, like if you don't have the notifications going off constantly, so it's using a bunch of battery with the vibration motor, it lasts like a month. They last forever. Like it's awesome. And you only have to, I'll show you now. If the time piece is like in front of, my step count or something, I can do this. And maybe it probably won't work because I'm on camera. This always happens. How about that? No? No. Wait.
Do the elements like rotate around?
There we go. Yeah.
That was neat.
The elements rotate will rotate around. So that it's not covering up the part. See, it's covering up my heart rate right now. Yeah. I don't know. I love them. They're great. I love analog watches already. So like analog plus the smart information that is actually glanceable and useful for me. And then you can also set individual people that you want to be able to receive text messages from. I do get phone calls on it because I usually leave my phones on wireless charging pads on mute and don't hear them. So just walking around the house, having the Bluetooth connected and feel my watch vibrate. So I know to run down and grab my phone when people actually call me. is really useful. So I like it a lot.
Nice.
Can recommend.
All right, there's a bunch of options.
Yeah. There you go, Rebecca.
Let us know.
Hopefully that's helpful.
Let us know what you choose, Rebecca, if anything.
Please.
That's right. All right, Flo, you get the email of the week.
There we go. There's that soundboard.
Better than the drum roll that lasts for 10 seconds? Yeah.
I like it.
Yes.
Right. I like it.
Okay, and then there's that too. Thank you, Burke. All right.
So this week's email of the week comes from Will W. Will W. writes in, I have what is a niche geeky question about Android phones. If I'm thinking about this idea with the wrong concept, let me know. I am visually impaired, so I use the voice assistant on my phone to tell me a lot of things. However, with my phone being a Samsung S7, it has always run a little laggy with the assistant turned on. So I was wondering if anyone there knows about how much RAM the assistant really needs to run smoothly on an Android device. I'm in no way married to the Samsung brand. I noticed that the S7 to S9 bear no changes in battery or RAM. I'm looking at OnePlus and their 7T Pro McLaren, or the 8 or 8 Pro. This is mainly due to the S10 only being a minor improvement in battery and RAM. I'm really hoping you folks can help me solve this. I'm not a big photo buff, so no need for the cameras to be souped up, but I really like getting away from Samsung, and I really like what OnePlus is doing. Thanks for all the stuff y'all do. I really enjoy your content. Thank you, Will, for writing in. I have to say, as a person who recently switched over from 3 years with the Pixel line to the OnePlus 8, which I'm really enjoying this phone. I'm still getting used to its bigness because it's a much bigger phone than what I was using before. But feature-wise, I'm finding it to just be very smooth, very fluid experience. And I've actually left the assistant on this phone, which I didn't do on the Pixel lines. Which might sound like, but Flo, why were you not using the assistant on the Google phones? We'll talk about that another episode. But I find that it's very fast. This phone is very responsive. And I think, Jason, if you remember the spec sheet, maybe David, I think it's 12 gigs of RAM is in the OnePlus 8.
The standard 8, I believe, starts at 8 gigs of RAM. It's the and then goes up to 12.
I think the review unit that I have in has 12 gigs. So I should say that. Okay. Which might be why it just feels so nice and fluid. But I think that that extra RAM does help in the same way that I have been putting extra memory into my PCs all these years to kind of just try and keep things going. You know, it's like changing the oil in your car. It doesn't necessarily fix the things that are wrong with your car, but it does help maybe some things run a little smoother. So I just kind of feel like OnePlus is a good idea to give a try. I will say, however, I have not tested the accessibility features on the OnePlus UI or the Oxygen OS. They shouldn't be any different from Android's built-in features, but that's just something that I want to make note of because I know that those are things people really rely on. And I don't know that experience, but I do know that I like what I have so far from the OnePlus 8, so might be worth considering.
You know what's really cool let me let you talk because I
keep cutting in. Go for it. I want to hear. No. I want to hear.
Please, you're our guest. You're our guest. Do it.
Yeah. Okay. So OnePlus is always one of the first companies that gets the Android beta ever since they opened it up to more companies than just Google. And something that is in the Android 11 beta is a new accessibility voice control feature. I think Dieter Bohn at The Verge did a whole video on this.
Yes.
But it's really, really good. It basically lets you completely control your phone with your voice. It's crazy fast. The assistant works really well. So if he's going to get a OnePlus phone, and he said he had a very geeky, nerdy question, so maybe he's willing to install an Android beta on his phone, that could be a really good option.
And OnePlus is typically the ones that they push through at a software updates much quicker than Samsung does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, and they're usually one of the first. I think last year, once they announced it at I/O, it was essential. It was a day later. And then OnePlus was 2 days after them or something like that. But OnePlus is always very fast. And if I can add a little anecdote of my experience with OnePlus, their phones are awesome. I met a guy in a Seattle Uber who was just a totally random dude, and he had a OnePlus 7T, and I was like, I never thought I would see this in the wild, but people actually own these things. And
you do. In the most unsuspecting people in the wild, I will say.
Yeah. He was ranting and raving about it. He was happy with it, so I'm glad that the regular people can like these things too.
And for those who are just really curious, very quickly, that accessibility feature that David is referring to, it basically, instead of assigning numbers to different portions of the interface, it lets you call out the actual, this button name, say the button name versus saying the number corresponding to where it is on the interface. So should make it a little easier to use.
Yeah. And because Google was able to shrink the assistant into a super small file and actually put it in AOSP. That was an announcement that happened last year at I/O. Assistant 2.0 is really fast because it's running on the system. It's not being sent back to Google servers and then back to your phone. So it's very good. And if you're going to control your phone with your voice, that would be the way to do it.
Yep.
Yeah, and I'd say as far as like let us know as far as that's concerned. RAM wise, I mean, on his phone right now, he has 4 gigs of RAM, and so if you're talking about things slowing down, yeah, it's a pretty dated amount of RAM to have on the phone 8. Even when devices are coming out with 12, sometimes I'm like, well, how do you possibly need 12? But actually, this could be one very big reason why 12 might actually be very useful to have, the kind of like always listening features of Assistant. But I'd say 8 is a minimum right now. And yeah, good advice all around.
Agreed.
Thank you, Will. And congratulations on getting the horns for the email of the week. That's all we have to give to you. That's it for this week, David Immel. Thank you so much for there we go. That was for you, David. Those horns were for you. Thank you for hopping on with us today. AndroidAuthority.com. What do you want people to know about what you're working on, where they can find your work?
Well, very soon I'll have the Sony Xperia XZ2, or not XZ2. Xperia 1 Mark II review coming out in the next few days. And then there are a bunch of embargoed stuff that will be coming out for the rest of the month. So I don't publish every day like a lot of my colleagues who run the News Desk and stuff. I mostly do reviews and stuff. So it's very like once a week or once every 2 weeks. So, but if you want to see my daily ramblings or phone photography antics, you can follow me on Twitter. At that little at sign that's right down there where I talk about wanting camper vans. So
at Dervid Immel. There you go. Right on. David, thank you so much. It's always great getting you on. We appreciate your
time. Thank you guys for having me on. I'm glad that I was in a position this time where I wasn't in a Japanese hostel where they were cleaning the entire time. So
that was a classic episode.
I love it.
That was great.
No, that was amazing. That's life. Yeah. That's life right there.
That's life.
Yeah. Well, right. David, I'm planning on venturing into Greenpoint again next week, so maybe I'll bump into you again. So we'll stay tuned.
We can do some
socially distant, of course.
Yeah. Now that hair cutting places are open again, my place is in Greenpoint, so I will likely just be wandering the streets with my mask on, being safe, and hopefully getting my awful hair cut. So
just ping us, let us know. We'd love to. We often do, like, down by the river, there's these rocks that are like about 6 feet apart, so we head down there with like a beer or something and just sit and hang out. It's fun.
That'd be great. I'll hit you up.
All right, sounds good.
Well, Ron, you're already on the screen, so what you got, what's going on?
I don't want to be on the screen. I want to be back home on my regular camera so I don't look awful. But other than that, thank you for bearing with me through this episode, our video watchers. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at RonXO, and keep an eye over at scorbit.io. We're getting very, very close to launch day. It's going to happen this month. So stay tuned if you're into connected pinball. It's going to be some interesting stuff. And then we'll have lots to talk about here on the show, because I'm in Android developer land and making an app and fun hardware stuff. And so going to have lots of stuff to talk about. So.
Oh, awesome. Cool. Let's make that absolutely happen. I would love to hear all about it.
Flo, it's almost there. Almost there.
What about you?
What am I up to, you ask?
Yes.
I have a very busy month ahead of me. I'm in deep in research land right now. So every day here, it looks like I'm stringing together conspiracies, but really I'm just doing a lot of research on a bunch of different products. So if you want to keep an eye on what I'm up to, you can go to florenceion.com, which is the Flow feed. You can also go to flowrights.tech if you just want a quick little link to where I am on the internet and things that I'm doing. Just a helpful little quick link there. I'm on Twitter at OThatFlow. And I will be around this week for that Google event that's happening tomorrow. Tomorrow? Is it happening tomorrow? Tomorrow
the
Wednesday?
Tomorrow's event?
Wednesday.
Yeah.
Oh, the smart home thing, yeah.
Come join my Discord if you want to come chat in a safe place where we talk about these things. See ya.
See you later. Thank you, Flo. Appreciate it. Special thanks to Burke, who's at the studio pushing buttons and pulling the TriCaster out of the hole when it falls into it. And also thanks to Anthony, who's filling in for Victor tonight to edit the show. Appreciate your help, man. You can find me all over the Twit Network doing shows. Of course, Tech News Weekly, Hands on Android. That's twit.tv/HOA. Last week's episode was about reclaiming lost storage and what is adoptable storage on Android. Coming up this Thursday, I dive into the nearby sharing feature and kind of show you how it sets up, how it's set up, how it works, kind of how fast it is. I'll walk you through the whole process so you can get excited about it coming to your device. That's twit.tv/HOA for Hands on Android. Do not forget to wear a mask. When you wear a mask, you're saving other people's lives. That's really important. So please do that. That is all for this week. We publish a show every Tuesday evening. Twit.tv/AAA is where you can go to find your episodes in audio and video format. Podcatcher links are there for any podcatcher that you might be using. Also, a link out to YouTube to the show page there so you can subscribe there. Whatever you like, just subscribe, then you'll get the episode and you don't have to think about it anymore. And we appreciate it when you do that. Thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll see you next week on All About Android. Bye, everybody.
Check out other shows here on Twit TV, including my show, Hands-On Photography. On this show, I'm going to show you how to get the most out of your camera, as well as be a better post-processor. So head on over to twit.tv/hop and subscribe now.